We were talking earlier on about pharmacies potentially being given the right to prescribe for 8 conditions. A caller says, I would love to see the pharmacists being able to prescribe for these minor illnesses. Well, that's if it's a free service for all. It costs me 60 euro to see a doctor for a diagnosis of 2 of these illnesses, then the price of the prescription on top of that, because they won't give a prescription without seeing a doctor, even though these 2 things I have quite regand. Know what I mean? I'm not quite sure what that means. Sorry, it might be a typo. I would be very happy if this can happen. Meets personal? I'm not sure what the caller says there. Could one of these houses not be adapted to facilitate your disabilities? Can't imagine a disabled person trying to live in a car. Well, this is in relation to our chat with Chris. He and his mother slept in the car last night. They're facing the same tonight. They've 2 dogs as well, so there's 4 of them effectively in the car. The mother is disabled. They were offered 2 council houses, but completely unsuitable, according to Chris, for his mother's needs. And she would effectively have been confined to 1 room and no access to the bathroom. But because those 2 houses were offered and were declined for those reasons, and also weren't in the right area, but primarily because of the needs of his mother, they can't even get emergency accommodation help from the council, which I really find quite remarkable. I would not like to be sitting there with someone saying, I'm sleeping in the car tonight, and saying, there's nothing I can do to help you. Now, that's one side of it. That's the side we heard. I have no reason to doubt him whatsoever. But it's just really is quite remarkable that we couldn't help that as a local authority or as a state, those 2 people, at least to have a roof over their heads tonight, tomorrow night, and what have you, until such time as they find a home. A caller says the only people to blame for the housing crisis are sitting councillors. In 1908, they built over 7,000 houses. There's nothing to match this kind of infrastructure now. Donegal County Council are reactive, not proactive. The power of the councillors is pretty limited, more limited perhaps than in 1908, if that's the actual date that you're referencing. But I take your point. Why is it with the technology we have now that when we get into a vehicle, it will not start until the seatbelts are put on, and that it does not automatically switch the phone off belonging to the driver? But you see, a big part of the cars nowadays is the integration, the phone integration, how it integrates with the screens. I mean, some of the modern cars now have a screen the full width of the dashboard, but also how your phone ties into the screen is a big selling point of a car. A lot of people now wouldn't get a car unless it had Apple Play or Android Auto. So I can't see the second part of that happening. But certainly the first part, as we mentioned to Inspector Seamus McGonagall, you know, people find ways around that, if the truth be told. There was even a system, I'm not sure how it was applied or what it was for, whereby there was a tube that you had to blow in to prove you had 0 alcohol in your system before a car would start. I think it was in the United States. And I can't remember what the application for it was, other than the obvious, but people were just getting someone else to blow into it. Just a thought, any passenger that travels with a drink driver should also be banned for, say, 6 months aiding and abetting. Shared responsibility. Maybe there is an argument for that. That, you know, the passenger, if they knowingly get on with someone who's under the influence of drink or drugs, that they also are banned for driving or from driving for 6 months. What do you think about that suggestion? Is it too authoritarian? My daughter's friend works in a busy place. 3 or 4 guys came in. They had a meal, but they slipped out without paying. What happened next? Well, the company phoned her on her day off to say that bill would come out of her or his wages for a few weeks. It was an expensive enough bill, as there was drink on it too. Where does she stand? What do other listeners think on this? Right, so this is a person working in a restaurant. 3 or 4 guys came in, had something to eat, drank. They bailed without paying. The company, the boss, phoned her on her day off to say that she'll have to pay for this missed bill. I mean, we do see that with drive-offs as well. I'm not sure how often that happens, but I do know of situations personally whereby the teller was forced to pay for a drive-off of petrol or diesel. I'm not sure what can this person do. Are they expected to stand at the door and block the people, even if they were aware that they had done a runner? What do you think? What do you think of the company ringing the person and saying that she'll have to pay the bill? What do you think of them ringing her on a day off? Do you think she should stand for it? What's your views? 086 60 25,000. Can anyone explain to me when people have got so brainwashed that they cannot choose their own way of life with confidence and not be ruled by what is on social media. I'm listening to that woman on Highland who's part of this influence. And I have to say, I genuinely agree with you. And I see it on all sides of the political spectrum, whether you support or advocate one sort of set of opinions or another. People I deem as intelligent and have respect for, being brainwashed and believing only one thing that they hear or being influenced by one particular person, I don't get it. I don't think that's thinking for yourself at all. So I have to agree with you on that. And a caller disagrees with me. Hi, Greg. I'll have to disagree with you over your use of the word protest earlier. You're suggesting that the Gardaí would be using a water cannon on protesters. You mentioned that the purchase of a water cannon was off the back of the Dublin riots. In my view, burning the Lewis and looting shops is not a protest. It is rioting for public safety. I think a water cannon is an appropriate measure. Yeah, maybe I misspoken and it should have said riots instead of what have you. But when will it be dispatched? So we've seen... say, for instance, we've seen where there's been a large group of people protesting something. There's been a couple of people that have misbehaved, thrown stuff at the Gardaí, for example, but the majority of the crowd hasn't. And they've been pepper sprayed and there's been an overspill of that and other members in the crowd have gotten it. Like, at what point will we see one of these water cannons turn up to a protest or a demonstration, which maybe there has some people rioting and it's used... sort of right across the board. Is that, that's potentially what we're looking at here. So we have to think about all these things to see if that's the way we want to go or if that's what we want to do. Now, Tradwife, we have a message in from a listener which reads, I've personally seen how the traditional lifestyle makes for a really happy home. Children are extremely happy and content with zero behavioural issues. Mum is happy, dad is happy, the system works, the homes run really well. On the other hand, I see women out working and stressing. Children are being reared by another woman. Kids have behavioural issues. Mum is not happy, dad's not happy. The house is a place of stress because you have both parents coming home from a stressful day at work. No dinner on the table, house is messy, which all affects the peace of the home and the children's energy. Yeah. And our guest was keen to differentiate between, you know, maybe a housewife or husband, you know what I mean? We know what the traditional roles are likely to be. And also the trad wife, which they are pretty much completely submissive to the man. Your story is a lot of us were reared in houses like that. Of course, I wasn't. My mother was working as well, but you know what I mean? So I get where you're coming from. But I also think that two parents can be out working and children can not have behavioural issues and mum and dad can be happy as well too. So I think there is a spectrum within both scenarios. What do you think? Lastly, before we take the bingo numbers, Greg, I would support the pharmacists having a greater role. I often ring my pharmacist for advice before ringing the health centre. Excellent. Okay. So we've had a few in on that and the majority are in favour of pharmacists having a greater role in the prescription of medicines for certain illnesses. Now, we're joined on the programme by well-known cancer services fundraiser, Billy Bustard. Billy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you very much for joining us. And before welcomed you onto the show there, I was just looking through some past work that you've done there. I think, was it 2002, you raised close on €39,000, which is a remarkable figure. But that's just one example of the fundraising efforts you've done over the years, Billy. Would you be happy to sort of give us an overview of what you've been doing and for what charities?
Well, as always, I've always been raising for the Cancer Bus because they get no money from the state, and without getting funding from the like of myself, they wouldn't survive. It's just a fact of life, they wouldn't. And it does so much good, that Cancer Bus, twice a week to Galway. And a lot of people that would be ill would be very glad to get up and down, and there's no charge. And the lodge helps a lot in Galway as well. So that's why I'm fighting so hard to stay in the Diamond, because the Diamond has been so good to me there every year. I only be there for maybe a couple of weeks. But it's a good place to raise money for the Cancer Bus. I have got a lot of money for them. Mm.
And this is the Diamond in Donegal Town. Do you know how much you've raised over the last few years? I mentioned 1 year, 38,000.
Hundreds of thousands. I've raised much more than that. Hundreds of thousands.
And I know you've sort of done tractor raffles and that type of stuff, Billy. Have you always located on the Diamond for a couple of weeks over the last few years?
Yes. Always for the last 20 years I have been on the Diamond.
Right, so take us back to last Saturday then.
It was before that, even the Sunday before it,
Sunday before,
as well.
Okay, yeah, you know, what happened?
Two different days.
So on the Sunday, what happened?
The Monday, a fella called Mark Sweeney.
Well, can I just say one? I just at this point, just till we get other sides of the story, if we just don't mention any names at this stage, Billy, if that's all right. So
that's no problem.
You can just say this fella landed over to me and where they're from. So what happened on the Sunday?
He said I had to get off the Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, look, I've been here for 20 years, never do any harm, and certainly running to selling tickets for the Cancer Bus to help people out, you know.
And was it a wee white van you had?
That's right.
Right, okay, I get you.
Oh, it was doing no harm, never did. No, the bikers do no harm either, you know.
Yeah,
they are fantastic.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a community resource, I would have thought. But anyway, let's get to Saturday. What happened then on Saturday?
Then on Saturday, myself and the bikers went back in again. And the traffic warden came to us, sent by the same man who will be on Sunday.
Yeah.
And he said, I have to fine you €250.
You personally?
Which was a ridiculous figure. Like. And on top of that, we had about 15 bikers at that time. There was more later on, but at that time, there was none of them ever fined or even anything said to them.
Yeah.
But they seemed to take a pick on getting at me, which was, I have nothing out of this myself. It's just to help the Cancer Bus. So I would like an explanation why I have to be victimised.
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. As I say, it's a relatively small van. It's sitting there, and you're just doing what you've done for 2 decades. You're trying to raise money for the Cancer Bus, but they don't want you on the Diamond. You've been told that if you insist on parking on the Diamond, you're going to be fined out of it.
That's right. That's right.
So if you, say, were parked outside the Bank of Ireland, for an example, that's not an issue. It's not your fundraising. It's where you park this van that you're facing the hassle for.
Yeah, but there's certain places there's no good to park.
No, I know that.
You
I'm
don't
just
get the.
Yeah, I just wanted to be absolutely clear what their issue was. Obviously, you want the Diamond because that's the footfall. It's visible. I get that, Billy. Sorry,
exactly.
The question was more: is it the location of the van rather than your activity? I knew the answer, but I just wanted to hear it from you. It's a prime location.
That's very good. Honestly, it's been so good to me over the last 20 years. So
yeah.
And I work for the Cancer Bus, the patients on it. And I'm not going to let them down. I'm not going to be bullied out of it.
Did they say to you it was about a license or anything, or literally just where you were parked? Like, what did the council rep say to you the Sunday before?
He said he wasn't that nice, and he said to move.
Yeah.
And I said I wasn't moving, and then he got the guards.
Oh, right.
And they were so nice, I have to say. They were so nice. And they said they were going to fine me for parking. But they never come. They went away. They said they had to go to a call out. Uh-huh. And they never come back.
And you pull the van on, fundraise, and then pull the van off. Is that right?
I usually go in about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
And I usually leave about 3 o'clock.
Okay, but you don't leave the vehicle there. You drive on to the Diamond, you fundraise, and then you drive off.
That's right. I stay on the van.
Yeah, I get you. And they just don't want you on the Diamond. That's just the bottom line. It was pedestrianised.
No, they seem to have a vendetta with my van. I don't know why. Mm. Because it's doing no harm, no more than the bikers. As I say, the bikers come there, they have their bikes polished up for their Sunday run or Saturday run.
Yeah.
And they're gentlemen. I meet them this last 20 years and they're doctors and judges and you name it are there.
Yeah. What has been the reaction in the local community?
I have got thousands of calls, Greg, and texts from locals. And when I go into shops, they're all supporting me. Mm. But that's why I want them all to come out on Saturday to show their support physically out on the diamond.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
You're going to have a demonstration?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So just to let them know that we don't want to be bullied.
As far as I'm concerned, Billy, any part of this country, it's the locals that own it. So the diamond in Donegal Town, as an example, I think it should be in community ownership in terms of what it's used for, what it's all about. And I think 100%. I think what it's used for and how it's used actually should reflect the community's feelings. So, I mean, unless the council believes that the majority of businesses and residents of Donegal Town want you off that diamond, you should be allowed to do what you've been doing for 20 years. I don't think anyone subscribed or signed up for these renovations, these changes, for this reason. I don't think this is why people would thought we were going down this route.
Yeah, and Greg, you know, I've been on the diamond, as I said, for that length of time. There was nothing wrong with the diamond anyway. Even back 5 years ago, it was grand. But they did a big renovation on it. But I wouldn't have done it because it was grand the way it was.
Mm.
And I was talking to the tourists that been there. And they come in to see the bikers as well, mind you. But they loved the diamond. They used to often say to me how lucky we were to have a place like it.
Yeah. I just find this just a wee bit of an old head scratcher, you know. I just don't see the benefit in taking you on this one, to be honest with you, Billy.
Considering well, they're what doing you're doing, that,
yeah. Considering what you're doing in raising money for the cancer bus, and it's a service that benefits all of Donegal and the lodge, as you mentioned there as well, and it's an issue that's close to an awful lot of people's hearts. They never sort of says you can. Did they say anything along the lines of that you can apply for a permit? I'm just that's something I meant to ask you. Was there any mention of permits or anything?
No, I just wasn't going to be allowed. That was the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It was very bad, actually. It was annoying. That's being truthful.
All right, stay where you are, Tony. Good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
It's Greg here, Tony. But listen, that doesn't matter. What do you think?
Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. It's only just so to not mislead you. It doesn't matter to me. Yeah. Tony, what do you think of this? It's a funny one, isn't it?
Well, I would know Billy. I wouldn't know him that well, you know, but I would know him over the years coming and going to Donegal Town there. Like, he would have been involved with the water buster over the years. But he's a very nice, you know, gentle kind of a man. Like, it would do you a good turn before you do you a bad turn, as they say, you know. And I think he's one in a million. Like, who else would do what he's doing? And I know for a fact that health-wise, Billy wouldn't be that well at times themselves. I mean, that's beside the point, you know. But I mean, for somebody like Billy to do what he's doing, and then for somebody to come along then and tell him, look, you can't do this for one reason or the other, we're going to fine you, it's just not right.
I mean, with everything that's going on in this county and across the country, what a hill to die on, this trying to shift Billy in the van off the diamond, like, for 4 hours. I mean, you know, of all the stuff, you know what I mean? This is quite
exactly,
a hill.
Yeah. Exactly. And as far as I know, just talking about the diamond there, apparently the stuff that they used on the diamond there, the new, what would you call it, flagging
stone,
or tiling, or on the new surface. Apparently, that came from China. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's not an Irish. It's not an Irish product.
I know that's interesting. There are people that say that we didn't spend enough on it, but I know. I'm not sure if it came from just outside Mount Charles, if they'd still have Billy on the diamond. To be honest with you,
that's where it really came from. Outside Mount Charles, right? I'm thinking, right.
Yeah.
But I mean, I heard this. It's not Irish, apparently. Anyway, it could. It may not be China either, but I mean, to me, it looks like a jigsaw puzzle that was just fitted in the wrong places. You know what I mean? They just come along and.
You see, the thing with the bikes, like, I've never had an issue with the bikes for whatever it matters. I can only be honest, and I am entitled to say that because this isn't a news bulletin, it's a show. You could argue, right, the bike's dripping oil, quite a few of them. I don't know. Like, I don't mind the bikes, and I enjoyed looking at them, right? But wee Billy here with his van, is she dripping oil on you, Billy?
No, definitely not. And the bikers are not either. Definitely not, for I'm there working the last year.
I'm just trying to work through the arguments here to see as to why we need to get you off this diamond, Billy. That's all. What, Tony?
I met Billy, myself and the wife were over there on Sunday, and we were just talking to Billy on the diamond. And, you know, he told me what had happened, and he showed me the ticket that he got. And, you know, this, it was just so disappointing. To think that we do such a trick on a man that's doing so much for people that you know, people with cancer that to travel up. We know what it's like to travel up and down to Galway. I get at it myself for treatment and for stuff, you know, and on the bus and whatnot, or driving. But I mean, Billy's trying to do something that's going to make it a lot easier for people, putting themselves out there in front. I mean, it's one in a million. Like, and I would just have to say, fair play to you, Billy, and I hope people pay heed to this.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
All right, Greg. I'm sorry, but Sean, I'm thinking back a few years ago when there used to be somebody there called Sean, I think, wasn't there?
There was the great Sean Doherty, Father Sean Doherty, isn't it? No bother. Right. I hope it's not that long since you've listened to us, Tony.
No, that's right. And listen, Billy, all the best to you, and I wish you well.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Sean, Tony. Okay, thanks for your time. All right. Okay. So, on this Saturday between 11 and 3 p.m., you're calling on people, if they back you, to sort of back you in person, Billy, isn't that it?
Exactly. That we, if they want the diamond the way it was a lot of years ago, come out and support us. It's all right phoning and all the rest, but they're nothing to beat being on the diamond and show your support.
And in fairness, too, it's, you know, as I say, it's good to get to speak to you and highlight it on the likes of, you know, Ocean or here on Highland, but at the end of the day, feet on the ground make a big difference. Stay, if you got 2 minutes, stay where you are. Councillor Michael McClafferty from further north in the county. What's the crack, Michael? What have you got to say?
Greg, thanks, Greg, and hello, Billy there. I think it's totally outrageous, and Billy should under no circumstances be forced to pay this fine, and as well as that, whoever the traffic warden was, if she didn't want the fine, should have more cop on as well, to be quite honest.
Yeah, but they're enforcing council rules, Michael. What can you as a local rep do, you know, as elected representatives? I know you don't represent Donegal Town, but you're elected for the county as such as well. What can you do, or what will you endeavour to do to back Billy up?
Well, I'll endeavour to do to back Billy up. Well, first of all, I'll be asking for this fine to be withdrawn, Greg.
Yeah.
At first instance, I'll be asking for the fine to be withdrawn. I'll be asking then, secondly, then going forward, that Billy or any other Billy like him should be able to sit in the diamond or anywhere else without fear or fine of being fined for doing good for other people out there. He is collecting money at the end of the day, as he done over the years for the cancer bus. We've all more or less, a lot of houses throughout Donegal have been touched, unfortunately, by this situation. And I think it's a total disgrace on the traffic warden that issued this fine. Like, to be fair, they could have used their initiative, Greg, to be quite honest about it. They could have simply passed on with plenty of other cars or vans.
Ah, but there was representatives from the council the Sunday before who came down and said, look, you're not allowed in the diamond, you have to shift off. The guards were called. So, like, I'm not here to defend traffic wardens, don't get me wrong, but they have a role. Okay, and if Billy's allowed to park there, next thing, a camper van pulls in beside him. So I know that's a ridiculous scenario, don't get me wrong, and I'm not defending traffic wardens, but they have a job to do as well. The council need to intervene on this, I think, and sort of say there's a discompensation or whatever the actual right word is that allows someone like Billy, even if a permit system was introduced. The diamond's for everybody. You know, Michael, I think this needs to go to the executive. I think that's where you need to make your representation and get us some answers as well.
Greg, to be fair, when I go off the phone from you, the executive is the next call I'm making, to be honest with you, to ask him to intervene.
Brilliant.
Because I think this is ridiculous if this ends up going forward, that Billy gets fined.
Okay.
And it's a total insult as well to the people of Donegal that are suffering from cancer situations, and this should be allowed to go forward to happen. Like,
all right, well, I'll
be doing everything within my power to
I'm going to let you go, make contact with the executive. Will you keep in touch with us, Michael?
I will, Greg.
Good stuff.
Thank
Get
you.
Back to us and see what they say. I appreciate it, Michael. I do appreciate it. That I know. I'm not sure, Billy, if you're familiar with Councillor Michael McClafferty. He's from further north in the county.
No, I don't. What part is he from, Gregory?
He's from Dunfanaghy area, isn't it? Yeah, Dunfanaghy.
But, well, you tell him that I be in Dunfanaghy and I get nothing but help.
Yeah, okay.
The opposite to what's happened to me in Donegal, and I've been, Glenties is fantastic as well. You have to move around and get nice positions to sell tickets. And I must say, Dunfanaghy is one of the better ones. You could tell them that they're fantastic. Right.
They'll have the red carpet out for you in Dunfanaghy and a ticket waiting for you in Donegal Town.
They do.
Right, Billy, listen. They do. I think what we have to, and I'm really confident, right? I have a lot of respect for Donegal County Council. I know they get some things wrong, and I know they get an awful lot right. But this is a scenario here where I don't think there's a listener listening to this show that doesn't want common sense to prevail. You've raised hundreds of thousands of euro for a cancer bus. Let us not forget the reason we need that cancer bus. We need that cancer bus because we don't have proper cancer services here in Donegal. And if we did, you might be raising money for something else, but you wouldn't be on this diamond raising money for... I'm from Donegal Town, so I can speak freely here, and I can tell you this now. If the diamond is not for allowing things like what you're doing to do it, right, then it to me, it's not a community facility. You know, it's not a community facility.
Gregory, it's very important to the people at Donegal, the diamond. It's a good place for people meeting up and chatting and whatnot. It's great. It's a focal place in Donegal, and if they close it like the way they want to, it slows the town down as well.
Yep. Okay. Well, listen, Billy, Saturday, I hope we get a resolution before Saturday, some sort of, even if they issue an emergency permit for you or something, so it means they can still enforce other issues or whatever. I don't know what would be required, but common sense has to prevail. I hope it does. But if it doesn't, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m, it's a protest against the council effectively banning you from parking your little white van that's not leaking oil or transmission fluid on the diamond to raise money for a cancer bus. Billy, we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Bye, and thanks a million. Good luck.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. Take care, Billy. Thank you very much indeed. What do you think? Maybe I'm missing a point. I don't know. Back shortly. Now, as we read a little earlier on, pharmacists will be or should be allowed to prescribe medication for common conditions such as allergic rhinitis, cold sores, conjunctivitis, impetigo, oral thrush, and so on. Tom Murray's president of the Irish Pharmacy Union, and he's with me now. Good morning, Tom. You're muted there, Tom. If you just unmute that, that'll be fantastic. So, Tom, some of the articles that I'm reading, it suggests that it is, it's proposed, others saying it's happening. You're at the coalface. What's the story?
So the minister launched his task force last July. The task force reported to the minister on the 22nd of July this year, and the minister finally launched the official task force yesterday. So it is now government policy that these changes will be coming into place. It is a very far-reaching and quite a broad initiative that the minister has done, and it is going to fundamentally, it has the potential to fundamentally change access to care for patients. It is in line with Sláinte Care. It's the right care for the right patient at the right time. It also ties in with Sláinte Care that it's about the clinical need, not the ability to pay. So broadly speaking, it's something that we welcome. Unfortunately, it's something that the IPU won't be recommending its members put into action yet, because as we've discussed in the past, we've been in negotiations with talks with the Department of Health for the last year. And we're waiting substantive talks for that to actually come around the budget process to deal with the fact that 10% of pharmacies are losing money, 30% of pharmacies are on the verge of non-viability. 90% of pharmacists tell us they're working under such an administrative burden that they face burnout. It's estimated that if the administrative burden was reduced, pharmacists' patient-facing time would double. So there's a lot of things that we really, really welcome about this, and I do applaud the minister for his vision on this. But there's a lot of things we have to deal with that we've been trying to deal with for a year.
From an outsider looking in, and also there's a proposal that pharmacists will be allowed to extend certain GP prescriptions for up to 12 months. I think... What from an outsider looking in, Tom, what this seems to me a very basic scenario is that The government recognises the contribution of the pharmacists. They recognise that pharmacies can make a greater offer greater value. But what has to happen now is that we need to reform what payments pharmacists receive to recognise the obvious value then that the government is putting it into the sector, if that makes sense.
That's absolutely in a nutshell, Greg. In those last 15 seconds, you have enunciated exactly what has been going on for the last 12 months and what needs to happen now urgently. So we are calling on the Minister and the Department of Health, as he has said to us he would do, that we would get into urgent negotiations to resolve the outstanding issues and even to look at the infrastructure for this. What hasn't happened is pharmacists weren't part of the task force. We have been told that the IPU will now have a place at the implementation body. So whilst this is announced as a great policy, there's a bit of work to go to do before this can actually happen. What it does mean is, yes, it does recognise the professionals of pharmacists. It does recognise the service. It also recognises the access to pharmacies that patients have. 87% of Irish people live within 5 kilometres of a pharmacy. There's 2.1 million visits a week to an Irish pharmacy. So it is an untapped resource. And really, we want to work with patients, to work with our GP colleagues, to reduce pressure on GPs. The IPU surveys or the IPU research has said that we could save 1 million GP visits per year. That allows GPs to deal with far more complex cases and means their surgeries aren't being clogged up with conjunctivitis and thrush and allergic rhinitis, as you mentioned, as just some of those three of the eight conditions. We've been asked why we're not doing it for private patients and just making money out of it. I said, because we don't want to be part of a two-tier healthcare system. The vision behind SlaunchaCare is that it's based on the clinical need, not the patient's ability to pay, not the money in their pocket. In Donegal, we have a county with a huge medical card population. If we were to turn around and say, OK, we're only going to serve the 25 to 30% of people who can afford this, that wouldn't be professional healthcare, and that's not where we want to be.
And also, it would sort of shift the public's view of the pharmacy being that community facility. Absolutely. That place that you just go into. Tom, I mean, it's probably early doors yet. There's an awful lot to be settled. But we had a texter in earlier on that was talking of, you know, it's they get one of these conditions reasonably regularly every time. It's €60 to go to see the doctor, and then whatever other costs are on top. Do you anticipate there would be a payment structure? In other words, that there would be a cost to the patient, but would it be lower than GPs or no cost at all?
Well, there will be a cost for both of private fee setting. That will be individual to each pharmacist to set. Competition law dictates that I can't tell you what I'm considering charging or what I would recommend to anybody else. And I also don't want to get into a kind of economic battle with GPs, because that's not what this is about. This is about access to care being easier for patients and to reduce pressure in other parts of the healthcare system.
But you do anticipate there would be.
There will obviously be some charge for the private patient and the state-funded element for the medical card patient.
Yeah. Okay, right. But also, too, its value of access as well would be factored into that. Do you think that this move by government means that we're getting closer to meaningful talks around the table about the future role then of pharmacies in providing healthcare? And, like, you know, is there two sort of tracks going on here at the same time or not?
I certainly hope it means that, Greg. I have attended 12 meetings with the Department of Health in the last year, and I'm hoping that my commitment to the minister and his commitment to the public is that we will try to get this thing in place. My commitment to him is that if he comes to the table and engages in meaningful negotiation, that we will be able to implement this. But the minister has to do that. And that requires a step from the minister and from his department. So that's what I'm asking for. It's what I'm hoping for on behalf of the pharmacists of Ireland, so that we can serve patients of Ireland.
All right, great stuff. Thanks as always, Tom. We'll watch on with interest. It's a story that is continuing to develop, actually, but it seems to be moving in the right direction. Take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. That is Tom Murray, who is the president of the Irish Pharmacy Union. We talked not too long ago about victim support at court, and court accompaniment volunteers are wanted. Emily Healy is the regional coordinator for victims support at court and joins us now. Good morning, Emily. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
great to have you. Now, just, a brief rundown, because, as I say, we did cover this quite extensively not so long ago, but what is the role of a victim support at court?
Yeah, so our sole function is to provide court accompaniment to victims, prosecution witnesses and their families when they're attending court. We don't support any accused or defence witnesses, so it's purely for victims or their family. Maybe a victim is deceased.
What are the sort of main criteria? It probably even comes down to personality traits, because you would have to be a compassionate, understanding and empathetic person, I presume.
Yeah, definitely. So I suppose we're looking for people with a common sense approach. You'd be surprised, common sense is actually quite hard to find. But yeah, we definitely want people who are good communicators, they want to listen, that they're empathetic. I suppose it's a very hard time for people. Could even be the hardest thing that they're going to do in their life going into court. It's not nice for anyone. So someone who's able to kind of be the calming presence within that situation. We don't require anyone to have any legal background or to have been in courts before. We would provide all the training in-house, and we would then support them as they're going through the training.
Yes, so they would be able to reassure whomever they're accompanying what's going on. This is normal. That's that. That's what that person is there for. This is what probably might happen next.
Yeah, so we go through the court process. We don't talk about any of their evidence with any of them, but it's just more, I suppose, this is what's going to happen when you go in, then this could happen. And look, things can always change, but there is a set kind of process that goes through every court case. Mm. So we can talk them through that and, I suppose, give them pointers as to walking up to the stand, stay standing, where do you want to sit in the courtroom? We'll get them a private area away from the general public. Just anything that can make it a little bit easier for someone when they're coming into court.
And people are being asked to apply from Cork, Donegal, Leitrim, Limerick, Longford, Waterford and Wexford. What kind of time availability might one need?
So we would ask that the volunteers be available at least 2 days a week during the court term. So the court term kind of runs quite similar to a school term. So at the moment, the courts are closed and they won't open again until October. But we would work around the volunteers' availability. So if someone wants to be not as much commitment, we would say maybe they could do just the circuit court. So for like in Donegal, I think it's run for 3 weeks until the end of the year. If they're available for more days, great. If they want to be a bit busier, we go into the district courts, which are they run at least once a week, could be twice, could be three times. So we'll work around their availability and what they're willing or able to give.
And in your conversations with people that work in this area, what do they get from it? What do the, and I mean, obviously this is a volunteer role, right? But I'm just to get a sense of, you know, when you're chatting amongst yourselves or you're getting feedback, what do people who volunteer say they're getting from this?
I suppose the most important thing or the most thing that we get that people would say is, that they get the kind of self-satisfaction that they've been able to help someone. Like there's a really, really nice feeling of someone coming up to you after the trial, regardless of what the outcome is, and they're saying, I couldn't have got through this without you, that you feel like it gives you a sense of purpose, I suppose. Another thing is we've had a couple of volunteers that have been retired and they say it's something for them to get out of bed, but without having to be fully committed.
Yeah.
So if they're going on holidays 1 week, they're not like, God, I have to put in my annual leave report or anything like that. So I suppose it is that flexibility around it, but also that you genuinely are helping people through something really, really hard and traumatic.
Okay, so if you've been listening to that and you listening to Emily and you think, right, okay, that could be for me, you can get more information by emailing recruitment@vsac.ie. That's recruitment@vcac.ie. There is also a website that you can go to. Obviously, it's vcac.ie, and you'll find the connection there for volunteering with us and just open the conversation. And I think a lot of the time you speak to people and you see, does it suit them? And do they suit the organisation, and move it on from there?
Yeah, so we do everything by invitation. So you'd be invited to interview, then you'd be invited to training, then invited to do shadowing. So shadowing is where you would shadow an experienced volunteer or staff member. And that's just to make sure that you're comfortable, but also we're comfortable with you being by yourself. But each stage is by invitation. And that gives, I suppose, us the opportunity to say maybe this role isn't for you, but also it would give that person the opportunity to say maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah, of course.
It's a very specific, I suppose, role. It's not for everyone. Sometimes it's very busy, sometimes it's quite quiet. So it just, it'll give everyone kind of the opportunity to have a get out the back door kind of clause.
Exactly, Emily. Listen, thank you so much for your time. Take care of yourself. Emily Healy, Regional Coordinator for Victim Support at CORD. We have those deets if you wish to contact us.